Good morning, Chairperson. We received the apologies from Honorable Mchono, Professor Khobisa. Ms. Botswa will join us very soon. Thank you, Chair.
The WIP is also running late. Honorable Kikana is running late. Honorable Mbata. Mbata want to leave early. And before more hands go up, I'm going to stop there. Back to the department.
I'd like to just start by also giving the apology for the DG, who's unable to be here today. He has asked that we give his apology. He had urgent business that he had to deal with the TVET colleges today, and they had to deal with those issues, and he was unable to attend. And I believe the Minister and Deputy Minister have also given their apologies for today's meeting. So we hope that you will allow us to present for him. He's requested me to represent him here at the meeting and lead the delegation from the department. Thank you very much. Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, we are here to report on the third quarter performance for 2016-17. This is part of our compliance reporting in terms of the work of the department. The presentation will give a overview of the sort of background and then go into the performance per program. We've organized it so that we can look at the core programs first. So we'll begin with university education and then move through technical vocational education and training, community education, training and skills development, and then look at the support programs in the department. And finally, we will focus on the budget performance over this period. In terms of the background, for the particular financial year, the department altogether has 38 performance indicators encompassing 70 outputs or targets. There were 10 outputs for the quarter under review, most of these in the core delivery programs, and specifically university education, skills development, and CET. There were no specific TVET branch targets in this particular quarter. The two support programs, namely planning and corporate services, had no targets due for the quarter, but we will present some of the progress made towards the achievement of the annual targets for those programs that didn't have targets in this particular quarter. We've structured, as I said, to start with the core delivery programs, followed by the support programs. And just to indicate that of the 10 delivery targets, the department did achieve 60% of them, and they will be presented in the slides that follow. I'm going to begin by doing the university education slides, and then I'm going to hand over to my colleague, Hess, to take forward the TVET slides, and then from there on we will just all present the various slides according to specific branches and responsibilities. In terms of university education, we had 5 targets that were due under the period, under review. 4 of these were achieved and 1 was not achieved. And really the 4 that were achieved relate to the work that we do in overseeing the university education system and our monitoring and evaluation of the system and ensuring public accountability for the funds that are provided. We had the particular oversight activities that were undertaken relate to the foundation provision grant, the financial health of universities, the use of the teaching development grant, and the use of the research development grant. So those are the focuses. The target that was not achieved was the target that we planned in terms of publishing the reviewed funding framework for higher education institutions. We have had a process underway for a number of years now to look at the review of the funding framework, and that was finalized by October 2015. The plan was to go through the processes, finalize it after discussion and public comment by the end of December 2016. However, the Minister requested, given the context of the system at that time and the issues around funding, that it should serve before Cabinet before it could be published. And because of the Cabinet program, it only eventually served before Cabinet in November 2016. And so we were unable to publish it before the target date. We still need to consult on this more deeply, and we have started that consultation process. Yesterday we met with the funding strategy group of University South Africa, where we discussed this, and we've got a process in place to meet with the finance executives forums and other stakeholders so that we can finalize the framework as soon as possible. We recognize the situation this year and the context this year, and given that the Presidential Commission is expected to put its report out in July or June, by the end of June 2017, we have planned now to finalize this after that report comes out, so that whatever alignment needs to happen can be brought into context. The framework really is not about the funding of the system, it's about the distribution of funds, the mechanisms for distributing the funds in the system. In terms of the oversight reports that were completed, I've indicated those already, and what we'll do is we'll do a very brief presentation on each of these reports that was requested. However, I wanted to indicate that should the committee require us to do a more in-depth workshop on any particular one of these, we would be certainly willing to do so. And given the importance of the issues at hand, it may be something that the committee would consider. In terms of the oversight reports, the first one, we're looking at the Foundation Provision Grant. This grant is given to universities specifically to assist with underprepared students at universities who are registered onto extended programs. So they will be doing a four-year program instead of a three-year program and so on. The total amount of the grant for this particular period for the year was, and that was a 2015-16 year, was $304,470,000. But the total budget available in that year to universities was more, at $372,512,000. And this is because of the carryover of funds that the universities have within their budgets for the earmark grant for foundation provisioning. It is expected that each university will retain some reserves each year. It's a good practice because they need to be able to ensure that they can pay their staff that they employ and so on going forward. It's really important and very encouraging for us to note that 68% of the full-time equivalent staff that were employed on foundation programs during this year were permanent employees. And that, we think, is a really important move in the system. We've moved up from the majority being temporary employees in previous years to moving towards permanent employees. We think this has to do with the fact that we have put this foundation provisioning now into the framework so that individuals who are registered on foundation provision programs are funded according to the normal framework, and they will be according in relation to the normal funding that goes into ordinary qualification. And then the additional funds through this earmark grant are very specific to enable better, more focused tuition and support for students. We were also very pleased to note that 75% of the permanent staff hold masters or PhDs, so they are well equipped to do this work. And as a whole, 13% of foundation students are enrolled in foundation programs. One of our other facts, which isn't specifically here, is that the staff-student ratio in these programs is averaging at around 10 per staff member, 10 students per staff member. And I think that's also a good sign, because it means that the institutions are taking seriously the need for the support for foundation provision. While the foundation provision, we've targeted this as an important program, and we had really wanted to push the enrollments in foundation provision in universities, given what we know about the students who are coming into our university programs. So we have had a target to move the foundation percentage of students in foundation provision programs to around about 30% of the system over the longer term. And we are encouraging universities to increase their numbers. There has been, and I will talk about it a little bit later when we deal with the actual output targets for the system, there have been some challenges, particularly with UNISA, and I'll speak to that. It's one of the reasons why we haven't met the targets that we expected to meet. The second report focuses on the Teaching Development Grant. The two grants, the Teaching Development Grant and Research Development Grant, have been brought into the system to assist universities to really focus on teachers and teaching and on research development in the system. It was about 3 years ago now that we introduced a specific grant that would go to all institutions. Previously, the Teaching Development Grant was a top slice of the overall block grant, and it was given to institutions that weren't performing well. So there was something skewed about that in terms of institutions that were performing well, even if they had many students coming from disadvantaged backgrounds, didn't get funds, whereas other institutions that weren't performing well got funds. And there was a kind of perverse incentive that you would get funds if you weren't performing well. And so a decision was made after a ministerial task team that Eunice Ballam led to rather look at this fund as something that went to every single institution to support teaching, learning, and development. And so each university had to produce a 3-year teaching development plan that was designed in line with 5 priority programs, but that would dealt with each of their own individual issues. And each institution was given a particular part of the fund. Those priority programs were funded and reported on annually, are the development of university teachers and teaching. And here we're not talking about putting teachers into PhD programs. We're talking about actual teaching. So the research development is around, you know, those kinds of qualifications. So here we would be supporting things like the postgraduate diplomas in higher education and teaching-focused programs. Then there are the student support programs, and those include a whole range of different types, including first-year experience programs, language programs, and so on. Enhancing the status of teaching, and that's towards supporting teaching awards and so on within institutions. Researching, teaching, and learning, which we think is really important, because what we're wanting to do is to encourage the scholarship of teaching within our universities. Program management, and this is specifically to enable universities to effectively utilize the funds that are provided and ensure that they are properly utilized for what they expected to be utilized for. And then university-specific priority programs. And those programs really are on an individual university basis, and they are dealt with in terms of that. In total, 616 million was allocated to this, and 43.2 million for national collaborative programs. The report gives detail of those. There has been in the past an inability of some universities to not spend the funds that are provided. And because they're earmarked, those funds sometimes accumulate within the university budgets. And what the department decided to do from 2 years ago was that if a university was unable to use their funds effectively, we would withdraw the new funds and allow them to actually utilize the funds they had in their budgets for their approved programs, and the rest of the funding was then pooled and reprioritized to enable us to implement the Staffing South Africa's Universities program, and particularly the NGAP program. And so in 2015 and 2016, that was done. Funds were reprioritized for the NGAP program, and that's enabled us to support universities to employ around about 200 new academics through the NGAP program. In 2017-18, we will be combining the teaching development and research development grants into the new grant, the University Capacity Development Program, which we have already reported on to the Portfolio Committee, and we are expecting a full closeout report for the TDG. The third report is the Research Development Grant Report, and here it's a very similar situation as to the Teaching Development Grant. Here there are 8 programs that are funded specifically, and they are all focused on improving research and supporting research development in universities. Monitoring and supervisor programs, research capacity development workshops, postgraduate support for staff to undertake masters and PhDs, postdoctoral research fellowships, employment or replacement staff, academic exchanges and mobility, and top-up of NRF and other development grants. And these top-up grants are really needed for those young academics who receive partial funding and who require that funding in order to develop themselves effectively as researchers. In this particular period, 200 million, more or less, was allocated to the RDG, and that money supported 632 PhDs, 322 masters, 233 postdocs, 306 academic exchanges, 341 contract staff appointments, 3,069 staff and research capacity development workshops, and it topped up 366 NRF grants. So we believe it had an important role to play in the system as a whole. But as we go into the new program, the Research Capacity Development Program, what we're trying to do there is to bring together all of the aspects in relation to this. I think the slide is in there. Let me see. These slides have just been put in the wrong order. I'm going to start with this one. The next report, the last report, is the Financial Health Report of Universities. I think it's what's important to indicate is that in terms of our annual reporting regulations, universities have to submit annual reports to the department within 6 months of the end of their particular financial year, which is December each year. So we get those reports by the end of June. At the end of June, then, we look at these reports, and particularly we have lifted out the financial reports from the annual reports, and we do an analysis of these. In terms of this, we develop a comprehensive report based on those financial audited statements for all of our universities. Critically, there are a number of financial ratio analyses that are used, and we went through a process, I think it was in 2014, was it? 2013-14, with the finance executives of the universities to identify key ratios that we would utilize in the report. And there are 13 ratios altogether that we look at, looking across all of the universities. And these ratios include a number of different aspects of the system. We're not going to go through all of them here, but I think it's one of those issues about the complexity of the report that needs to be highlighted as we talk to what is in these slides. The report, really what it does in terms of those ratios is it considers the financial health of each university and of the public system as a whole. We cluster the universities and analyzing them according to type, according to traditional, comprehensive, and so on. And we really try to look at whether institutions are financially healthy at the reporting date. And you'll remember this is the end of 2015, December 2015. Whether they are living within their means, within the funds that they actually have available. And we try to understand the trends across a number of years. And basically looking back a five-year period, or really three-year period in the report, but to understand what the trends are in the system as a whole, but specifically in each institution. And in understanding any of the ratios that come out, we have to look backwards over those trends to really understand them in detail. Some of the findings, and here I'm going to go to this one because I think it was a slide that's important to look at. Here we look at the overall results of all universities. And I think here, in terms of operation results for all universities, you can see on this slide the actual amount of income, the expenditure, and what the surplus or deficit is for the system as a whole. Now, looking at this particular surplus deficit, you can see there is a surplus in the system as a whole. But I think it's very important to recognize that this surplus, the majority of it, is in very few institutions. But it is an important thing that universities actually have reserves, and particularly that they have council-controlled unrestricted reserves. It's in having council-controlled unrestricted reserves that institutions are able to manage their finances effectively and live within those means. In terms of the sources of income, it's really important to recognize that the income from direct government subsidies, in other words, from the DHET, which is the state subsidies indicated there, remains the single largest source of income, and it constitutes in 2015 38.5% of the total budgets of the universities. I think another important thing to recognize is that those state subsidies aren't the only funding from the state, because funding for student fees through NSFAS is counted in tuition and accommodation fees, so that comes from the state, and funding from DST for research, funding from other departments out there in terms of various research aspects fit into third stream income. So when you look at this, read it, understanding that that's not talking about, when we talk about state subsidies, we're talking about that direct subsidies from the DHET, and we're not talking about government as a whole in terms of the funding from government. The important thing here is to recognize as well that tuition and accommodation fees are an important part of the overall funding of the system. And we can't, that needs to be put into the context, because if we end up without these kinds of fees, institutions would have difficulty. And then third stream income is clearly also still a very important part of the funding. But as I said, some of that third stream income does come from government directly, particularly from the Department of Science and Technology directly, but also from other departments that are supporting research and development in the sector. I think an important issue to also think about, and which is looked at as in the system as a whole, is around the student debt rate ratios. We haven't put those details in here, but it is important to recognize that there is increased debt within the system, and that universities are having to manage that debt. And that's why all universities have created effective and hopefully in the end efficient debt relief policies to assist in terms of ensuring that they can get those fees in over time. When we talk about these 13 indicators, there are two indicators specifically that talk to the sustainability ratio, financial stability, and it's become a focal area for all public higher education institutions across the sector. So we thought it was important to just highlight these particular ratios, but we need to understand what they mean and what the context is. When we talk about the sustainability ratio, we're talking about comparing the university's reserves to its annual expenditure level. In other words, what is there in reserve and what is they expend? And then that ratio doesn't take into account any income at that particular point in time. So if we could think about ourselves as a household, a one would mean that if I lost my job tomorrow and had no more income coming into my household, I would be able to sustain my lifestyle as it is for a whole year. That's what it means. So that's a safe sustainability ratio. Yeah. So... No, but that's a sustainable, that's what it means. So a one, that's what a one means. And when we take cumulative reserves, we're taking all reserves, including restricted reserves. So institutions will have reserves that can't be utilized for operational costs. They are earmarked for specific things, they're an endowment for a particular purpose, or they're for a particular infrastructure program, or so on. So those are you know, so if you take the whole reserves, you'll get a particular sustainability ratio. If we take, so sustainability ratio, it's important to recognize that it doesn't imply that the institution is financially unsustainable, because it is still sustainable because it's getting an income. It's getting the income from the state, and it's getting income from fees and from third stream on a continuous basis. So when I think we have to put it into that particular context. We can also calculate the sustainability ratio on the basis of unrestricted council reserves, and we've utilized that one as a proxy for thinking about sustainability, because we need to know that the university could utilize those funds for their costs. So if we look at that and we work out the sustainability ratio of those universities which have a ratio greater than one, calculated on the basis of unrestricted reserves, we have those universities that are above the level of one. So there are four universities that have a sustainability above one. And then we have the rest of the universities with a sustainability ratio below one. And that's based on unrestricted reserves. And with those, there are a number of differences among them. We've just put that number there just as illustrative. Those institutions that have an asterisk next to them, they're at low risk, because while their sustainability ratio calculated on their unrestricted reserves is less than one, their sustainability calculated in terms of their restricted and cumulative reserves is greater than one. So those institutions are at low risk, and you'll see they are mentioned there with the asterisks. The institutions that are at higher risks are the ones that are marked in red. They have a negative sustainability ratio, and what that really means is that they will not be able to, say for example, University of Fort Hare at a minus 0.68, is not going to be able to operate without its income in a particular month. And I think that's really important, because that's the issue of ensuring, and it's where universities are vulnerable, particularly at the beginning of the year, when, you know, that period when they aren't getting an income from the state, and they really are dependent on the income from their fees. So it gives an overview of it. In terms of the overall findings of the report, we did indicate that the institutions, the system as a whole, is operational. It can continue to operate, but there are a few really big red flags. So one is around student debt. And it's fragile given the situation we're in at the moment. So I think what's important about doing these reports from the department's perspective is that, firstly, it's ensuring that universities are reporting effectively and they're compliant with the reporting regulations, but secondly, it's to give us better insight into what's happening at the level of each university, so that as we interact and support the universities in their work, we have more detail around that and we can monitor the system more effectively. In terms of the system performance, there were a number of targets, I think 10 altogether in terms of system performance, and most of the targets, 13 altogether, most of the targets have been achieved. I'm not going to speak to each of these targets. You can see the numbers there. Most of them have been exceeded in terms of what was planned. There were only two targets that were not met by the system, as reported in October. And the first one was around the first year entrance into foundation programs. Now you can see that target is quite far below what was expected. And the reason for that is that initially UNISA, which you will know is a very large institution in the system, had targeted a number of foundation programs. But as we were doing oversight of UNISA, we realized at that particular point in time that the programs that they had targeted were not effectively being reported on, and we found it extremely difficult in the HEMA system to tell the difference between students who were apparently on foundation programs and students who were not on foundation programs. And at that point in time, there was a realization that there wasn't a veracity around that data, and so we wouldn't accept that those students were on foundation programs, and the department withdrew the funding from that and have requested UNISA to relook at this whole issue, and we are going to work with them now to see whether or not we're going to support them in foundation programs going forward. UNISA is a different kind of institution from contact institutions, and unless they're able to give that extra special support, we can't consider that kind of support for them in foundation programs. So that's why that number is so different. And we are probably going to have to look at changing that overall target if UNISA doesn't come back on board in terms of offering effective foundation programs. In terms of eligible students obtaining financial aid, the original target of 205,000 was set in the MTSS at a point in time where we knew we had limited funding for NISTAS. But there was a decision at that level to keep that target because that was the aim, that we would have approximately 25% of our undergraduate students supported through financial aid and NISFAS. And there was a determination to work towards getting more funding for those students. So that target was left in there knowing that we were unlikely to meet it at the time. However, we do expect this year we will get to that 205,000 given the extra injection of funding that has come in 2016 and 2017. So that is why that figure is lower. It's because of the total amount of funding that was available through NISFAS at that particular time to fund students, and the decision that students would rather be better funded than have too much top slicing and underfunding of individual students to make it spread thinly. That brings me to the end of that report. I'm going to hand over to Per Magnus to take us through the TVET report.
Thank you, Dr. Parker. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, thank you very good morning, first of all, and thank you for the opportunity to present. To start with, let's just for a moment reflect on what is Program 4, and that is really about planning, development, implementation, monitoring, maintain and evaluate national policy and programs, assessment practices, and systems for the TVET sector. All right, so it's all about TVET. For the year, we as a program have 11 targets, of which 3 was all achieved in the second quarter, and the remaining 8 are actually all targets that lie in the fourth quarter, which actually then leaves us with in terms of targets, very little to report for this quarter. But what we had thought to do is to take you through some of the progress that we are making towards the 8 targets that we have in the fourth quarter. And perhaps, although it's not covered in the slides specifically, I think also perhaps just important to reflect very briefly on exams and certification, as I think we all know that that is really a hot topic and something that really needs to be resolved. Now, I believe there were comprehensive presentations done last week by both the DHET and CETA on the whole examination situation. And just to say, well, in the week I can't really report significant progress, but just to say that in terms, first of all, of resulting, there are about 12,000 outstanding subject results which we are working with our colleges. We have the data now and certain data testing protocols we are working through with CETA, and we still at this point feel on target to issue those results by the end of March, as we said last week. Then also perhaps in terms of the certification, sorry, let me just find my page. Here we go. The NCV certificates outstanding at present is around 33,000. Of that, 24,000 we do still believe we will have ready by the end of March. So I think that that will take the bulk out of it. The remaining 8,500 will be prioritized as soon as they are somehow more difficult. There are some errors that we'll actually have to check manually. So as soon as we've done the bulk of the 24,000, we'll then get into the 8,000. And the commitment by CETA is remains that it will be June of this year. And then also, all the NATED certificates that are outstanding, of which there's roughly 45,000, the commitment also there remains June. So, I mean, just in brief then, we still feel confident that what was said last week and those commitments made, we will keep those. And then perhaps also just to say, in our new APP for next year, although that's not up for discussion today, we have included exam reporting in every quarter. I think as long as this issue is a burning issue, and until such a time that it's resolved fully, it is only appropriate that it gets put onto the agenda for every quarter. So that will be done for the new APP as well. Okay, so then looking at the 8 targets that we are working towards for the end of quarter four, actually, so it's really providing some sort of a progress report. There are two steering mechanisms, which is the National Admission and Promotion Guidelines for the NCV, as well as revised conduct policy for the NCV. Now, this process has actually really been long in the making. There's been a ministerial task team. That report was really engaged with in detail, and at some point, the department then handed it over to Uma Lucy, who is the Quality Counsel for that particular qualification, to do the complete policy review. I'm pleased to say that the policy review is just about complete. The document was sent to our minister at the end of last year, late November, and we are now, as a department, we have engaged with it. We have given our first round of feedback to Uma Lucy, and this policy will now have to be gazetted for public comment, which will happen within this month. Having said that, though, and really feeling that we are nearing completion of this process, it does put these two outputs for the end of March at risk. To still go through a public comment, integrate all of those comments, we are at risk in terms of those two deliverables. In some way, you know, it is a Uma Lucy process that has unfolded. We can't shortcut and we don't want to shortcut the public comment process. You know, so we will just have to see what can be done within this month, but I can flag it as a potential risk. All right, then if we move to the next slide, in fact, it then talks a little bit, first point talks a little bit more on the NCV policy, and simply to say that it is in process. There are actually quite substantial changes proposed to the policy, where the NCV program currently is a program with the exit level after each year of study. In the new policy, it will become a single qualification with one exit level at the end. So then for that reason, you could also understand that promotion guidelines and so on will be impacted quite significantly. Okay, then to move on to the next point, the next deliverable for the end of quarter four would be a revised costing model for TVET college programs. This is something not done every year. I think the last review was done by Fugaji, perhaps 3-4 years ago. PwC is assisting us with this round of review, and the intention there is really just to look at program costs. What does it really actually cost the college to deliver those programs, and then to write those into standardized program costs so that we are sure that we are not under or over compensating colleges per student. So that work actually is well underway and will be completed by quarter four. All right. Then moving on, oversight and monitoring of teaching and learning plans. Teaching and learning plans, and in fact this will be our first round of getting the implementation plans back. So basically it happens in two phases. There's a planning process that happens in quarter two, and that is in fact one of the targets that we've already signed off on. But in the, you know, so it sort of works a year behind. The first planning cycle was done in 2015 for implementation in 2016, and now we are getting the report on what progress was made in 2016. There's been quite a comprehensive process. There are 7 areas that we look at in terms of this teaching and learning plan, and it really covers everything from enrollment planning, practical teaching at the college, lecturer development, so everything really that a college needs to consider in teaching and learning. And so the monitoring of this happened towards the end of last year in a sort of final stretch of the academic calendar. And that report is now being consolidated, and then we will have some details as to what movements colleges have made in terms of improving teaching and learning. So also that target we feel is pretty much on track. We've made use of our provincial officials to assist in the monitoring. It was not possible for us to monitor all colleges, all 50 of them, although a significant sample has been done. And also from national, we did deploy some of our staff, also because it's a new process, you know, to make sure that we're really monitoring this thing properly. Okay, then moving along, in the same rhythm as the teaching and learning plan, we've also implemented a student support plan. The student support plan looks really at pre-course support, on-course support, and then also exit support. And in a similar way to the teaching and learning plan, the evaluations of colleges is underway, and that final report at the end of the quarter will then give us an indication as to the progress and interventions that colleges have made in terms of student support. All right. Then moving along, in terms of our next deliverable, which is a monitoring and evaluation report, this in fact happens twice a year. So in the second quarter, we reported basically on the first two academic quarters, so up until June. Am I right? And now we will be reporting on the last two quarters of the academic year. And this monitoring of colleges, a new framework has been developed. Well, in fact, that was previously, and this new framework is now being utilized. It covers basically five areas and really looks at the total college. So it covers things such as management, governance, academic success, growth and access, and all the systems that support a college, so HR, financial systems, and so on. So that report is then also due at the end of the second quarter, and all indications are that we will be in a position to report. Moving on to the next indicator for quarter four is college infrastructure maintenance, and what we've done there now is an audit of all college infrastructure and what maintenance requirements are necessary. Needless to say, this was a fairly difficult task, and you know, quite comprehensive, looking at all colleges. I am pleased to say that things there as well look on track. And then once we have that report back, we will be in a position to make some assessment as to what sort of financial means we're looking for to really do maintenance and upgrades as is necessary. And an action plan will then have to follow from that. All right, and then our final indicator for quarter four is establishing a coordinating structure for the TVET system or for VSET. It was envisaged in our white paper that the department would set up a new public entity called SAFESET, which was the South African Institute for Vocational Education and Training. However, after consultation with National Treasury, we were told that we really cannot set up a new public entity at this stage, given fiscal constraints. And so what the department then decided is that we would try and establish a unit within the department to do the work that was envisaged for this institute. Now, the work really is quite important work because it deals with matters of curriculum development, lecturer development, And then also research skills, well, not skills planning specifically, but research around program qualification mix that a college should have. And so this unit then will be established within the DHET. It will be NSF funded at the moment for a period of 5 years, and the intention is really to drive and give momentum to curriculum reform and lecturer development that needs to go with that. And we are also well underway to establish that unit. All the job descriptions have been done, positions are about to be advertised, and what the department has decided to do is to put a small advisory board. We can't establish a formal board because it's not an entity, it's just a unit, but the intention was that the structure should coordinate both business and college interests, so that we have a TVET system that is really responsive to the labour market. And so in order to achieve that, we will put in an advisory board. So it's just really a small board of people that can give advice and guidance as this unit finds its space. And so that is also well underway to being achieved in this final quarter. And that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Magnus. Can we then go on to the program 6CET? We'll ask Mr. Diali to present that. Thank you.
DDG, the remainder of the reports, I'll have to ask all of you to see if you can speed them up. We were hoping to do everything within the hour, so that there's sufficient time for engagements on the report. Now, if we do that, it means everything must be squeezed into the 5 minutes. So I'm going to ask for some creativity here to not let us do this for 2 hours. Can we try and see how we can assist each other here to speed up the presentation. What's the problem, Honourable Pazoli?
Chair, this is a very important report. I'm wondering why we need to fit it all into an hour, because we don't have much else other than minutes.
It's you that always complain you don't have sufficient time to engage. This is the issue, Honourable Members. That's what I'm following. Unless you say you don't want to engage anymore, then that's the issue. But let's see. I think we have to balance both the reporting and the engagement. I think that's my plea. Can you proceed?
Thank you, Chair. David Yale is the name. Quickly, Chair, with regards to the Community Education and Training Program, I think we've presented before to the committee with regards to the fact that this is, in a sense, a new program, and therefore part of the work that we're doing, firstly, is around implementing new processes and policies. So if you look at the outputs for the current financial year, we have 7 outputs, 5 of the 7 are around policy development. So with regards to the 7 currently for the year, 3 have already been approved, which is your M&E policy, your strategy on partnerships, which has also been approved, as well as the teaching and learning plan. Now for this quarter, we have 1 output which deals with regulations which was not achieved. And basically this output relates to our intention to reorganize what we have inherited from provincial education departments. And basically this particular regulation deals with how we need to establish, merge or close centers that we have inherited from provincial education departments. Now, on the basis of legal advice, initially we had developed regulations, but on the basis of legal advice, we were told that regulations is not the remit of the Minister of Education in terms of the CET Act, so we needed to do this as policy. So then there was a time lag between getting the advice and converting the regulations into policy. However, at this stage, this particular policy is now out for public comments, and therefore we'll be able to finalize it within the financial year. So this is one of the outputs we couldn't complete in the third quarter. However, with the rest of the outputs, this is progress thus far. With regards to the steering mechanisms that deal with, firstly, the National Curriculum Policy for Community Colleges. Basically, this National Curriculum Policy is assisting us in changing provision in terms of programs from what we've inherited from the centers in the Provincial Education Department. So this will allow us to look at what is responsive programs for out-of-school youth as well as adults, and therefore this will guide the CET colleges themselves to then implement new programs. At this stage, this particular document has just been approved by the Minister for Public Comments, so we think that we'll finish off the public comments process before the end of the financial year. The next one is the conduct policy for a new qualification called the General Education and Training Certificate for Adults. The intention is that when this particular qualification comes into implementation, it will then replace the current GETC. It is a reworked qualification which reduces the requirements for adults and out-of-school youth to be able to achieve this particular qualification. So the conduct policy is assisting us around how we put in place assessment and examination processes. So in terms of status with regards to this particular policy, at the moment it's with the Deputy Minister, but otherwise it's a policy that will also go out for public comments, which we're expecting that will also finalize by the end of the financial year. Then in terms of the next slide, The next slide is around the other targets for the year, which are annual targets. The teaching and learning support plan, this is the first time we're also looking at putting in place a national teaching and learning support plan for the newly established community colleges and community learning centers. This particular target we have achieved, it has been approved. This will then assist us in terms of putting in place standardized support for the 9 colleges that we have established nationally. And then hopefully with this, we also are addressing the question of the improvement in student performance. The next one is on college infrastructure maintenance. The report has been compiled and has been routed to the DG. The honorable members must know that with regards to CET, we don't have our own infrastructure. However, we partner with other institutions, whether it's your TVETs in some instances or your universities in the provision of space. In some instances, we also are having memoranda of agreements with NGOs, and therefore they provide teaching and learning space as well as office infrastructure space. So in some instances, we do have to do some maintenance in terms of those particular infrastructure provided by partners. So we have done a report, we've done also some work around ensuring that the facilities are up to date for the functioning of the 9 community colleges. So this particular report will also, as I'm saying, it's going to the Director General for approval. And then the last output, which is an output for the financial year, the end of the financial year, is an output that deals with strategic partnerships. This particular strategy has already been approved by the DG. Now, this strategy guides us in relation to the establishment of a whole range of partnerships within government and outside government with regards to the implementation of programs for the CET College. For example, we've established partnerships with your Catholic Institute for Education around the use of their skills centers to expand provision within the community education and training branch. We've also established partnerships with universities around doing research in this particular area on community education and training. Similarly, with VETS, we have undertaken such partnerships. In addition, around curriculum development, we rely on skills from TVET and university lecturers to assist in the development of curriculum. So this particular framework of strategic partnership then guides everyone within the community education and training system at national level as well as at regional and at college level. So, Chair, these are the policy instruments that we're putting in place as part of consolidating provision for the new system. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Mr. Mvale.
Thanks very much, Doc, and Chairperson, members of the committee and colleagues. I've got 3 slides. My alpha slide is slide number 30. My omega slide is slide number 32, Chairperson.
May you be there.
Thank you, Chairperson, with all the wisdom. We heard as the skills development program number 5, 4 targets for the period under review. We have met 2 targets and we have not met 2 targets. The first one on slide number 30, a report on the implementation of the National Skills Development Strategy by all CETAs. The report was completed and approved. Perhaps also just to mention something else that we are doing comprehensively around this area. The National Skills Authority is doing a report for the whole duration of the National Skills Development Strategy 3 up to 31st March 2016, and then also is undertaking impact study with regard to all the learning programs that are being rendered by CETAs in the country. Also, that will be a 5-year program with regard to the National Skills Authority, expecting the impact study to be ready by March next year. But then, of course, the other 5-year report on the work of CETAs, it should be available by before the end of this financial year. With regard to achievement of trade test pass rate for the quarter under review, you see that the achievement was 67% and our target was 54%. So it's good work around that area. These were the two targets that were not met. One is in relation to workplace-based learning program regulations. This is the one that will be dealing with the learnerships, internships, work-integrated learning, apprenticeships, or artisans. So the policy was supposed to have, it's supposed to have been concluded or approved by 31st December 2016. So it has not yet been approved, but then I can attest that it's already now en route to Minister. So it is going to be concluded before the 31st of March 2017. Another one is average lead time. Average lead time is the time when a person is applying to be trade tested on the day of the application and the day upon which a person is trade tested. Our target day is 120 days, we're at 132 days, but then I can also mention that originally we have been at 160, so we're going down with regard to this. That was due to employment of about 7 assessors at Injela who commenced with their duties in May last year, and now we are working harder to have 2 boiler makers, assessors also, to be employed so that we'll be able to deal with this particular area. Slide number 32, which is my Omega slide. There are two very important also targets that's with regard to the National Skills Development Strategy. The committee will be aware that the National Skills Development Strategy 3 has a 5-year lifespan. So that lifespan has come to an end on the 31st March 2016. So now the minister had to extend the lifespan of the NSDS up to 2020. So allowing the process of the National Skills Development Plan as well as the CETA landscape, and obviously we're also presenting on this next week to the committee, where I'll be going into details with regard to the CETA landscape as well as the National Skills Development Plan that we are planning to be ready to be implemented by 1st April 2018. So the two are together, the National Skills Development Strategy as well as the CETA landscape. There below, the last one there in the column is with regard to artisans. The annual target there for new artisans qualified, the target is 21,110. And then you see there we are standing at 14,853. So we're quite very positive with that target that we will be making. If we are at this point in time at almost to 15,000, because normally a volume of the work is done in the last quarter with our experience. Number two, there is a new artisans learners registered nationally per annum. So our target there is 30,750. Currently we are standing at 19,782. That is the target that we are a bit pessimistic about it to meet, because this is one is people who are applying for them to be registered for artisans. So this one is depending mainly on us in our advocacy work, encouraging people to register for apprenticeships within our system. So we are likely there to be around about 28,000 or so, but then we are pushing very hard to ensure that the target is being met. Thanks very much, Doc.
Thank you, Mr. Mvalo. Can I then ask Dr. Sishi to take us through the next two, which is policy and administration?
thank you, Dr. Parker. Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. The two branches on program one and two. First, I'll start with Program 2, which is Planning, Policy and Strategy, a transversal branch that looks into policy across the three branches in the system. There are two major areas for this branch, and that is the policy on open learning and distance education, which is a crucial policy that is chair, not necessarily due for reporting in this quarter, but it's important for us to share with you the progress we've made in the development of this particular policy, which already is out out on public comments, and we are confident that we'll be able to meet our annual deadline on it. The monitoring and evaluation framework for the post-school education and training system. At some point, Chair, we did present the post-school education and training plan. And we did indicate at that point that concurrent to that process, we are developing a monitoring and evaluation framework because we believe that the credibility of this instrument is also crucial. And at the time that we are consulting the rest of stakeholders across the post-school education and training sector, we should also be doing the same with this. I'm happy to report the progress in this particular policy already, which has been finalized and is due for further enhancements. There are a set of key reports, which I'm not going to go through in details, Chair, but I will just mention them because of the importance of these reports. One of them is the report on international relations. We did provide the committee with a comprehensive presentation on international relations, and the committee did cite areas of concern in relation to this particular area. And one way we resolved to deal with it is to provide a comprehensive report on the entire monitoring and evaluation, and it's due by the end of the quarter and already finalized, and it's undergoing quality processes and accountability processes within the department. I think it's a report that will assist to indicate how partnerships that we have made with our counterparts internationally assist us in ensuring that the targets that we've set as a country in terms of higher education mandate are met. Macro indicator trend report on track to finalization as well. There's a report on the implementation. It's actually an implementation strategy on open learning and on open and distance learning. In this report, Chair, there are three main areas. Firstly, it's the development of the framework for open learning. It's the survey on distance education, particularly in the TVET colleges, and our position paper on online programs and course offerings. This is a part of a report that kind of will give us a status on the progress that we've made, but it will also highlight the challenges that we are faced with in dealing with these matters. We are very proud of the report on the skills supply and demand that was released last year at our colloquium. We have committed ourselves that we will annually, update this kind of a report, and that I think we are also on track in finalizing that kind of a report. Those are the key issues, except, Chair, that annually I think we have this target of producing annual statistics on post-school education and training system, and we're complete with that report. There's never been a time in the past that we've struggled in dealing with these issues. We are more innovative in the new report that I think we're going to be publishing this year. I believe that it will assist us, to have a better understanding of the sector. If you allow me, Chair, I will just make a few comments about Program 1, which I think is important. And I will invite in my comments for Program 1 also comments from my colleagues who are here. It's the CFO who's here with us. We also have the chair of the audit committee, which really I think it's important for us, and we are grateful that we've managed to have him being present with us, because their chair, I think we thought members of the committee would be more concerned about in terms of our administration program one, with how far the Auditor General has has gone in this year's audit, and whether we have areas we are concerned about, and if we are, what are we doing to deal with this? Even though this is not necessarily what we should be reporting for in this particular court, I think the presence of the audit of the chair might just assist the committee further in this regard. I have to indicate that, Chair, in the last two quarters, we did declare in this committee that since function shift, we in terms of our capacity, particularly to do certain things. One is recruitment and selection. In this particular area, you know, if you look at the vacancies, that we still have not succeeded to fill, which undermines the capacity of the system. We were struggling, but I'm happy to indicate that there is some reasonable progress in this regard. You will recall that the Director General at the end of the second quarter also reported on the vacancies in key posts within the structure and what was our plans in this regard. I think we are happy to say that there is progress in trying to meet those deadlines in respect of program one. We are concerned about disciplinary cases that are unresolved. For example, 10 disciplinary cases were reported, and 4 cases have been resolved within 90 days. I think that is an indication of the struggle that we have based on the capacity that is there, but we are, in a steady kind of way, building that capacity in the system, and we are confident that we will defeat this one. Under the recruitment and acquisition, the challenge here is that we currently have 188 days instead of 180 days. Which are the lead times for recruitment requisition. And that is an indication that we are unable to timelessly fill the vacancies within the system. And so we want to upfront indicate to the committee that this is the challenge that Program 1 is faced with, but at the same time assure members of the committee that the Director General is doing everything in his power with the support of all the branches to ensure that we deal successfully with this one. Allow me at this point, Chair, to just for a minute ask the Chair of the Audit Committee and the CFO to make additional comments on Program 1, should they feel they could do so through you, Dr. Parker.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the comments would come out when we also address the financial information. So I'll go through the financial information and then hand over to the Chairperson of the Audit Committee. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, third quarter summary is then the expenditure up to the end of December for the department. You'll see there that the total expenditure rate for the department at the end of the third quarter is 83.6%, and the variation, if one would have looked at a normal ratio of around 75%, is due to the transfers to universities and to TVET colleges, which are not done on a month-to-month basis, specifically for the universities. All the block grants, the normal subsidies, are paid by November each year. And in the case of TVET colleges, we have more than two-thirds being paid in the first 9 months of the financial year and the remainder during January to March. In terms of normal operations, if we would take out the transfers, that is a bit seasonal, you'll see that the normal average for the department is around 73.2%. Just go back to the previous slide, please. Thank you. Compensation of employees was at 73%, And that consists of personnel, normal personnel expenditure, which is for the department as a whole, including our TVET and CETs that we inherited, as well as specifically examiners and moderators. Now you'll see that there's some overspending on the side of examiners and moderators. That in fact substantially increased by the end of January. The total spending after the November exam claims were processed by the end of January were around 218 million. So it's almost like three times the allocation. Specifically for examiners and moderators, we have a program with the National Skills Fund, and the National Skills Fund carry this excess in the sense that we do not have sufficient funds in our baseline to deal with this expense. If we look at the next slide, just in general, Chair, that everything in terms of transfers and subsidies were processed as planned and in line with the payment schedules agreed to and approved by National Treasury. We do monitor expenditure very closely, especially because of our small baseline, and we do have some risks of possible overspending in some components in the department. That is monitored closely, and we are managing that to ensure that we do not end up with any unauthorized expenditure. We did implement the cost containment measures that was instructed by National Treasury, and we do not have any problems there at this point in time. Detail regarding the status of the programs will be provided in the next two slides so that you can just see the specific information, just to highlight that Program 3 shows the highest spending trend, as explained, because of the subsidy payments to our universities, as well as to the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. The NSFAS transfers are always transferred in line with that of universities to ensure that that money flows during the academic year. To date, we have no irregular, fruitless or wasteful expenditure. We do, however, have a risk in terms of our regional presence, especially on the side of CET colleges, that there may be some irregular spending, but we are monitoring that very closely. In terms of the expenditure per program, Program 1 is relatively on par with 75%. Program 2, a bit low at around 60%. But we must take into cognizance there that there's quite a number of commitments, specifically under Program 2, and those will come through during January to March this year. Program 3 very high at 91.3%, as I already explained. Perhaps just to indicate there that although it looks big, there's still a balance of 3.4 billion rand under Program 3. The majority of that are in relation to ad hoc claims that we must still receive from some universities. Some of the ad hoc subsidies are based on a claims basis. For example, the interest and redemption of loans and some of the grants where they must provide and prove certain progress before a further transfer is made to them. By the end of February, like in as at yesterday, the additional transfers made during January and February were around 260 million rand, and there's quite a few that's in the process of approval to be transferred during the first 2 weeks of March. For Program 4, just to again highlight to the committee, in the adjusted allocation that you see in the second column, the 6.960 billion was an increase of 43 million from the original allocation. Now, you'll see that Program 5 decreased with that 43 million amount. That was as a result of funds reserved under the provision of the ETDP CETA, which we will now directly transfer to the various TVET colleges for the internal training and lecturer capacity development. The reason why we reserved that money first under the ETDP CETA was that the program for colleagues, the branch for TVET, first looked at all the plans for the training before anything was approved, and we shifted that funds then during the adjusted estimates. And those monies would be transferred to the colleges during March. On Program 6, Community Education and Training, good progress there, and an additional amount of close to 200 million plus was spent during January and February, and we believe that we will be close to 100% by the end of March. In terms of the direct charges, also just to remind the committee again that the revenue collection of levies by National Treasury reflected a decline, and therefore the adjusted allocation, that's 15.462 billion and no longer 17.639 billion, a decline there of 2.1 billion. Spending is on par, and that is happening on a monthly basis. So in terms of our next slide for economic classification, I don't think there's anything additional to highlight, just to indicate that for under transfer payments, our other public entities, SAQWA, QCT, OCHE, they still had the fourth tranche outstanding by the end of December, and that has been paid in January, so the total spending there is already at 100%. In terms of TVET colleges, the 944 million increased to over 1.2 billion during January, and the remainder of the transfers will be made during the first 2 weeks of March. In summary, Chair, by 31 December, all transfers to institutions, including subsidies, were on schedule. We continue with the monitoring of expenditure, and we do have strict measures. In fact, during the last senior management meeting, the Director General also once again emphasized that we must ensure that we only spend on crucial items and for those specific areas where it is direct service delivery that's involved. Chair, the next slide refers to the audit actions as requested by the committee. Action plans in terms of the 2015-16 audit were developed. It was also assessed by the Auditor General. They were happy with the actions to be taken, and there are weekly reports that's provided on those plans by each branch in terms of the implementation thereof. In terms of the compliance to date, there are four key areas that also the Audit Committee raised, which is a concern. First of all, it is in regard to specifically the HR records, especially for TVETs and CETs, and then the issue around examination claims. We do have some problems in terms of claims still at exam centers or at regional offices that did not reach our examinations component, with the result that we cannot process them on time by the end of March. So that is a matter that we try to improve. In terms of performance information, there is a key risk, especially on the side of the targets to be reached by the TVET branch, and then the matter of record keeping of all disciplinary cases or investigations. That is also a matter that is receiving specific attention. The last slide, just a reflection for information, the current progress in terms of dealing with the various audit actions as identified. Now, there were in total around 92 aspects to be dealt with. 49 of those have been completed. On the actions in process, perhaps just to specifically highlight that in terms of finance and SEM, the total 15 outstanding items there are specifically linked to matters related to the compilation of the financial statements, such as areas around lease commitments, some age analysis of debtors, the accruals, provisions, and those kinds of matters, which at this point in time cannot be reflected as completed. There are processes in place to ensure that the matters are being addressed, but they are still reflected as being outstanding. The other high matter that where you can see that there is quite a large number of actions in process is specifically under human resource management, and then you will also see the technical and vocational education and training branch, where there are quite a substantial number of outstanding matters, and those are indeed then the critical areas that the audit committee also raised and is concerned about. So at that point, Chair, I would gladly hand over to the chairperson of the audit committee, should you wish to add some additional comments on these. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, good morning. And I don't have much to add to what the CFO has said. We are on a strong drive at this stage to get the department to join the select few of departments with clean audits. So it's a focus area for us at this stage. The key areas, as highlighted by the CFO, that we're still worried about, concerned about, it is the HR issue. There are still files that are not complete, files that are not there, but you are aware as a committee of the huge task that we had in terms of taking on all the staff members with a limited capacity. The same with, we need to prevent any material adjustment to the financial statements after submission, hence we are looking at these issues of commitments such as the claims, etc., that we have to look at. Definitely. Then one area we've improved a lot in the department in terms of the quality of our performance information. We've implemented a system, but there's one thing that we're still worried about, and that's the quality of the performance information that we get from the TVET colleges. That has caused the AG not to rely on these figures. So there's a huge drive at the moment, together with the AG and with the branch, to make sure that we really get an unqualified opinion on this as well. We had a special audit committee meeting at the end of January to look at progress with regard to this. We were not happy with a number of areas because we have sent internal audit in, we've sent the control internal control unit in. They still found some deficiencies. These were also discussed with the DG. The DG had an immediate meeting where I also attended with senior management to make sure that these issues are addressed, and we have another special audit committee meeting on the 15th of March to again monitor progress, Chair. We really need to get the department to a clean audit, and it is within our reach. Thank you.
Thank you very much, everyone. You've managed to keep it within the time that we wanted. Thank you very much, honourable members. I'm not going to waste any time. Honourable Tsuela, I see your hand. I see your hand. Honourable Kikana, I see your hand. Honourable Van der Westhuizen, I see your hand. Honourable, all of you, your hands are up. Tsuela.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. And let me also appreciate the report that we have received. Maybe let me start by the comment Dr. Sishi made that the disciplinary cases are not resolved on time because of capacity issues within the department. But if I were to take you back to the second quarter,
The report was that these problems are not resolved because of unavailability of employees. Are you, by implication, telling us that employees are now available? It is only that the department do not have capacity to deal with those issues. Now, the second question will relate to slide number 10. In this slide, we note that there were funds that were withheld from two universities, Walter Sisulu and UNISA. Why were the funds withheld? But equally, the target of 30,400 was not achieved in the foundation programs. You short of something like just under 12,000. Can these be attributed to the withholding of funds? Now, the third question relates to slide 21. There was a target as set by NSFAS of 205 students that were supposed to be funded, and it is reported here that 178,000 were funded. Is it a case of shortage of funding, or are we running short of students to fund? That's what I want to hear. Okay. Now, with regard to TVET, the college infrastructure, I can see you're talking about maintenance. But then I just want to hear from you, because of course we know that there is campuses that are supposed to be built, and you received quite a number of bids, plus minus 338 that were supposed to be adjudicated. And so the department couldn't deal with that, and you appointed a service provider to evaluate the bids. How far is the process? Are contractors on site? That's what I want to hear. And finally, because I cannot ask everything, and slide 31, interestingly, again, in your second quarter reporting, slide 16, if you still have it, the application time was plus minus 124 and not the 120. But today, it has increased to 132, as per that slide. Would you agree with me that there is perhaps a regression in performance during this quarter? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson, and let me appreciate all the presentation that were made. My first question will be on the report of the National Treasury that was talking to the understanding of the compensation of employees by the end of the third term, which was at 327 million. And then that was lower than what was projected. And the issue was the problem of filling of posts that did not take place as projected also. And the process was in place by the department to fast-track the process by finding a service provider. My question is, because the department also reported about the budget constraints, where will the money to pay the service provider come from? The second one is with regards to the financial health of universities. The five universities that were Fort Hare, Sefako Makgathe, KwaZulu-Natal, Walter Sisulu, Tshwane University of Technology, and Mangosuthu University of Technology that were at risk. My question was that, does this mean that these universities will not be able to cover a year's expenses?
without needing additional funding. If they will need that, does the department have that extra funds to bail them out? On your slide number 5 on skills development, we appreciate that you on the average lead time, you went as from 160 days up to 132 days, but we still encourage you to go to the target of 120 days, and then you also promised that there are 2 boiler makers that will be employed. How far is the process on this employment of the 2 boiler makers so that you can reach that 120 days target time? Thank you, Chairperson.
Sure, thanks, Chair. The first one is a comment, Chair. This is just for our study group to consider. I'm just putting it on the table that I find the presentations that are participatory in terms of not just speaking and listening for 1.5 or 2 hours, I find that to be, my mind end up winding up. Remember, I come from a school where at last was 35 minute concentration. To get it to concentrate, not stop 2 hours, is rather too much. So I'll suggest in the future we make it participatory. Speak 30 minutes, people interact, ask questions, make comments, and you continue. That way you keep it lively. Some of us are old, we fall asleep very easily. Yeah, my question is for Comrade Dai. Just on those programs of universities that you spoke about, the foundations and so on and so forth, I'm interested in the nursing occupation per se, because in the past they used to do BQRE. When somebody has been a nursing sister for 10, 15 years with experience, do BQRE and come back from UNISA with a BQR and becomes appointed, and you get appointed as a tutor. So they generated their own tutor, their own tutors. I'm worried about the TVET colleges and it's generating its own tutors or lecturers, because there you need experience, just like in nursing. The advantage is the experience is there, because they do practical. They work while they're studying with UNISA. So my question now is, it was with UNISA. Is it not possible to expand it into other universities? Because this is a very broad field. And I think if we follow that example of nursing, that generates its own tutors, we could do the same with TVET colleges. Some with his experience from TVET and working experience could go into university, study further a degree, and become a lecturer. This is the first question. The second question on TVET, we said that by 2030 we need to generate 30,000 artisans a year from 2030, and now you're saying we are at 1921. I get a little confused, because one day we don't have facilities, we don't have lecturers, another day we are up to date. What is the real situation? Are we up to date? Are we coping? And will we still meet the target of 2030?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I first want to say thank you very much for the presentation. I particularly found the performance indicators on universities relevant and quite interesting, and giving us a lot of insight. On the other hand, the performance indicators on the TVET colleges
A differ vastly from that of the universities, while we're actually in the same field, and I'll come back to that just now. So my first question, and I also link it to the AG's findings that about 48% of the department's performance indicators were, you know, not verifiable, that they were not measurable, etc. Now, my first question is, can the department also report regarding TVET colleges on similar criteria such as the financial health of our TVET colleges, which I think is of extreme importance to this committee, on the staff qualifications and the status? Dr. Parker quite rightly said they're delighted to see that, you know, X percent of lecturers working with foundation programs are permanently appointed, because that's how you grow capacity. But my question is, can we have similar figures in future for our TVET colleges? How many of those staff members do possess the necessary qualifications, and secondly, are permanently appointed? In terms of the funding model, it's important and it's crucial for the long-term well-being of our universities that the funding model be revised from time to time, that it be introduced, that it be communicated well. But the department has been completely silent on the funding model for TVET colleges. And I'm concerned about their financial health as well. And then lastly, the TVET side has been completely quiet in terms of system performance, whereas we hear from the university side the number of graduates, the enrollment figures, etc. On the TVET side, it's been quiet. And I fear that people don't speak about things when it looks bad. And the fact that they are not referring to those critical criteria or indicators tell me that we need to be concerned about it. So please, can you tell me, do we need to be concerned? Can you give us those figures? And why are you not reporting on that? Then I also would like to know, I see there's a severe overspending on examiners in our national exams. What, to the extent it seems to me like 100% overspent, a doubling of in terms of what has been budgeted. Why that sudden jump? Why is it that you got the budget so wrong in this regard? And then if I look at the budget estimates that were submitted to Parliament last week by Minister Gordon, I see that not this coming financial year, but the year thereafter, they are planning for a drop in the number of staff employed by the department. Now, I do know that I think your figure of 36,000 staff, which makes this department about the fourth or fifth biggest after the correctional services and the army and so on, includes all the FET college staff and the CET college staff, etc. But how in this day and age, where we know what the need for skills is in this country, is it that the budget 2 years from now reflect a drop in the number of staff employed by this department? It just doesn't make sense to me, Chair. And then thank you also to Honorable Kakana on the figure regarding the artisans. I do know that our minister has been on public record speaking about 35,000 apprentices annually being signed up, etc., etc. I'm looking forward to also to hear where have things gone wrong and what are we going to do. Do we need a different funding model? Because it seems to me I see funds drive behavior. What are the department's plans so that we can reach that critical target? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Report on university financial health. Is it me?
Your neighbor. We can switch up, otherwise we can't
hear you. Oh, okay.
Thank you. I've just been switched off.
So Chair, you don't have control over our mics, eh?
switch up your mic?
The report on university financial health is so important that I do believe this committee should see it urgently. and not wait for a workshop on, you know, all the reports that are happening. So I would like to formally request that we receive that report urgently in order for us to assess the financial health of universities for ourselves, because I'm not happy with only the one indicator being shown, because I don't believe that that is necessarily the crucial indicator, although it is clearly an important one. And I think I would like to formally request that. My second point is the CETA lifespan being extended until 2020. I think this is the first we've heard of it. Colleagues may be... so it has been brought to the committee before. Because what seems to have happened here is that the minister has kicked for touch, having encountered difficulties clearly in restructuring the CETA sector, and so he is leaving us with a dysfunctional sector for another 3 years. And I'd like to ask the CETA representative what interim measures are being put in place to clean up the CETAs in the meantime, because it's no use now waiting for the further documents on restructuring. Clearly the restructuring attempts have not worked. What is the plan then for cleaning up the CETAs as they stand? Because they cannot just be left to fade away into 2020. They seem to have been rather seriously neglected. Now, the significant findings in last year's Auditor General report on TVET and CET colleges, which the Chair of the Audit Committee has emphasized, I think there were 92 findings, many of which were from that area, like HR and TVETs generally, and only half of them have been dealt with so far. So I think you're a long way from a clean audit. But could we have further comments on what the aim is then for the remaining, whatever 92 minus 42 is, number of findings before that date. And then my last point is simply to comment on the delay in the funding framework. Could I just get some idea of how universities are responding to this delay? Because as is the case with CETAs, I think they've been waiting for the new funding framework for quite a while now, and it seems to be being postponed and postponed, probably, I would guess, for political reasons, because bringing out a new funding framework while the student protests are expecting a new entire system is probably not wise. But how has this affected universities who are waiting for the new funding framework? Thank you.
No, I didn't see your name, that's why I'm saying okay. I didn't see your hand. It's not that I don't know your surname. Honourable Simang, and then followed by Honourable Killian. I thought Honourable Putu, was your hand up?
Yes, it was, Chair, but I think Prof has touched on a few points.
Okay, so you covered? Okay, then the last one is Honourable Killian then.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I must also welcome a very long and very well-prepared report. But like Honourable Kekani, I feel that if we receive one report and then engage on it, perhaps it will make our life much easier than to listen for 2 hours and then engage. Chair, I've been covered by a number of questions that my colleagues have asked before me, but I've got these few. The first one is on the teaching development grant. We commend the department for this big grant of over 600 million. We are happy with its purpose to enhance the status of teaching. but we are very disappointed with the fact that there are some university staff who are not making use of this golden opportunity. I believe that the aim is not only to enhance the capacity of the teaching staff, but it is also to help with improving the university throughput. There are serious complaints about the throughput at the end of each year from our universities that it leaves a lot to be desired. The question, therefore, is what is done about those universities who do not make use of this grant? To roll it over or to transfer it is not going to solve our problem, if, as I think, the problem is to improve the throughput. Then there is also a serious concern when it comes to TVET colleges about the delays in the issuing of certificates as well as the issuing of the results. I don't know what the challenges are that it takes long, but I know that students in particular are very dissatisfied with the delays. Also on TVET colleges, we are told that there is still a big number of vacancies. Again, this is not very good for the results at the end of the year. I would just like to know what are the challenges at that level. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member.
Finally, thank you, Chair. Just first of all, I would like to start by thanking the Department for a very extensive presentation. Much as I support the notion that actually we should have it in more chunkable bites. Unfortunately, this is part of the quarterly report process, that we look at the whole department and that we zoom into critical areas. So I understand why we have it in the format before us. Chairperson, I am actually going to work backwards. I would like to start right at the back, and it is the AG findings, the financial controls, etc. And I would like to just express gratitude that a department is working towards a clean audit, but that I agree with some members who expressed a concern that we're quite far from it. And it's because we have inherited a whole quagmire through the community colleges and the TVET colleges, and we have to accept that reality. However, it is good to know that there is a serious sort of attitude within, also through the audit committee, to work systematically through the problem areas. But I am concerned about the note on slide 46 with regards to the following risk areas. And the HR records, and I will going to come back to HR. What is the problem? Is it our HR management function that is not well capacitated? Is it the number of bodies? Is it the ability to conduct proper HR management? Do we have legal capacity within that department, within that section? Because we cannot sit with a situation where we are dealing with disciplinary cases the way that we are dealing with them at present. It's not on. So I have a really serious question about that. Then, examination claims. Now, one of the other members referred to how can we overrun our budget so dramatically as far as that is concerned. It appears to me that we understood last year that we had a moving target. But when are we going to understand the size of the system as far as TVETs are concerned, that we can be better equipped? I'm very concerned if we are still going to get a flood of claims. Are we not going to be in a position to understand how big is the system, to plan for it, to know exactly, you know, what can we expect? How can we overrun so extensively on that specific budget item? So I want to raise that point. Then, the performance information. It is, as I said, we have inherited a whole sector that is providing very serious complications in management. Now, how are we going to correct that so that we, as a, well, that the department can plan appropriately and that the Auditor General can rely on the information that comes forth from the colleges? What is the action plan to get that ready? Is it necessary to pass additional legislation or regulations to make it compulsory for colleges to submit, and failing to do so would in fact expose them to disciplinary action or whatever? But what is the remedy there? Chair, I really feel we can't continue like this. And then obviously the record keeping of investigations that I referred to. Chair, and that brings me to the capacity as far as legal is concerned. I referred to HR and I said, is there a legal capacity within HR to deal with disciplinary? But in the department itself, now I know we have a person who works on legislation there, but do we have, why is it that, for instance, the regulations for the establishment of satellite community learning centers, how is it possible that the department could set up a target and only to find in the year that, oh my goodness, you know, the minister doesn't have that power to do it. So why, how does it come about? Surely the department's legal services should have advised to say that you cannot set up that target because the minister does not have that power. So there's a problem there, Chair. Where was the legal advice as far as that's concerned? And it's now going to be a policy, satellite community centers, but, you know, as I say, you know, what mechanism are we putting in place? Then, just to go back to, I think, the college education sector. Slides 27 to 29. I have dealt with slide 27. Then the conduct policy. It is stipulated that we will have that policy towards the end of the financial year, but it's 4 weeks from now. Is it on par? Is it on course? Will we get it? And then on the next slide as well, I would like to suggest that it is a little bit of a concern if we rely on buildings that belong to other bodies, such as strategic partners, etc. My experience is in my constituency area is that, for instance, there's a contract between basic education and one of the institutions which belongs to the Roman Catholic Church, but it's not maintained properly. So whose responsibility is the maintenance? Then we're going to run into all problems as far as that is concerned again. Is it not more advisable, although one can argue about maintenance of government buildings, but can you not instead engage in relationships with other departments where you have a mutual understanding that there must be a level of quality of buildings provided for community education colleges? I really wanted to alert the department on that. Is it desirable that we go that route? Chair, I'm covered on the other issues in terms of questions, but I would like to ask the department these sort of more overarching problems that I've identified. But thanks for the presentation. It's very informative. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Can I add the following? The first one is on the format of the report. I think it's something that we have spoken to quite a bit. I think also I hear what some of the members are saying about the length of the report and so on. Some of it, of course, is unavoidable. But I think what will help the members is because from quarter to quarter, one of the things that we are quite interested in is to see, one, is the department moving towards a clean audit, but more importantly, what's happening to the service delivery aspects of the department from quarter to quarter, and that would include the financing thereof also. Now, one of the things that we don't see you do is so, in this quarter, you tell us these are the ones that has not met the target. But when you come to us in the next quarter, you forget to talk about including that also. And then say, this quarter, these are supposed to be your targets, but we would like to report also, we have not met the last target, we now have met that target. We think it's important for the members to track the progress. Maybe we should discuss how you need to restructure the report in such a way that those objectives that we also would want to be met can be catered for. So I think it's a conversation that we must have with you on the formats. I would agree the report on the certificates. I agree we had everyone before us last week, but now we have the department before us. And the department has a target, minus Umalusi, minus the other one, Sita. And your one is supposed to be a three-month one, which then are with the rest of them also. Now, that means you're supposed to be telling us every time that you come here, you're supposed to be telling us the targets on the certificates. I think we must correct that one. That one has not been done properly and correct in here. Because all of the other problems that is associated with the certificates and all the other ones that are added now, notwithstanding the not only the NCVs, if you, insofar as your policy is concerned, can tell us every time that you come here, then we think that we can see whether the department on its own would are capacitated enough to stick to their own policy. So this, so I'm saying you, every time you come to us, you must talk about the certificate aspect. I also want to ask, somebody gave a report on a small board. Now, what informs you to have a small board? Is it a policy? Is it a legislation? Is it a what? You see, when we create something, there's money that must follow. So Treasury is right. But now, what empowers you to have, whether it's small, tiny, medium, whatever, but as soon as you create something, it's informed by what? By what legislation? By what policy? By what PFMA, what. If you can tell us, how did you get to that? Because then you're creating an illegal little something there. We hear you when you say what the intentions are and so on, but we don't think it's just automatic. For the CETs, there was a target also that you said, and you spoke about the Gazette. There are no dates on these things. There's no date on the Gazette, on the GETC, there are no dates that you say they either were going to be achieved or something like that. Lastly, I want to say I think all those second last. I think DDG Parker. In a week or two's time, we are supposed to be, in terms of our program, have a workshop with yourself. We think you must bring all of those reports in that workshop, so that the you take the committee through each and every document, sentence of that aspect, so that the committee can make further input ourselves into this thing. I don't think it's a document of just let's read it. I think we must have a say in what the content of it is. I want to ask, look, it's the end of the, what year? I wanted to say tax year. Yeah, well, it is the end of the tax year, the financial year. I think it will help every year when you come to us this time of the year, give us an indicator of where things are at. Because you have the CFO, the audit committee, as we sit here now, we have an idea, are we on our way, are we winning or not? I don't think you have to wait till September when you come to us in your annual report. By now you have an indication already, and I think it will be in your interest to have a separate page to say that insofar as this quarter is concerned, this quarter is taking us towards something. So in every quarter, because that's really the intention also of why you go to Treasury on your quarters, and Treasury also report on it, and that's the same why you come to us equally, is also to give us that indication. So over and above your targets, your overall target is that by the end of that year you were supposed to have a fleet audit, you were supposed to have all of that. So quarter by quarter, we'd like you to include that. I want to ask honourable members, as they decide how they're going to respond, and the DDG is going to allocate what to who, let us just take 5 minutes. Body break, and then you can also take the opportunity to just divide everything amongst yourself. Thank you, honourable members, and everyone else.
I'm Thank you.